If someone were to ask you the time, like right now, would you say 9:13 or 13 after 9 or about a quarter past the hour? The way you say things can help other people figure out where you're from. Pop or soda, sub or hoagie, sneakers or tennis shoes. The differences can be subtle, but the suite of choices is a pretty good clue to where you live. Our guest this hour tracks the differences and maps them out in real maps in a new book called Speaking American, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk. Josh Katz got his regionalisms from southern New Jersey. The sandwich is a hoagie, not a hero, and footwear for the gym is a sneaker, not a tennis shoe. He took his Jerseyisms to North Carolina for statistics training at North Carolina State, and now he works as a graphic editor at the New York Times, turning data into understandable stories and pictures. Josh Katz, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Your job is really interesting. I mean, given the kind of material you have to turn out for the Times, what are some of the recent stories you've worked on?
Lately it's been a lot of politics work. A lot of it has been tied up with the election. Now that that is over with, we get to explore some non-politics stuff, which is fun.
So you're still working on things like where the voters came from and what they feel and those sorts of maps?
A little bit, but then we have some more lighthearted fare on the way also. Mm-hmm.
I had to chuckle a bit once I opened the book because we're speaking about politics, but you got more maps here of divided America. But this is not like red and blue in the political sense.
Right. And I mean, I think part of what we're trying to do with the book also is show that, you know, while you can kind of divide up the country into all of these different places that say all of these different words in a way that also has a way of uniting us in the fact that we're all so different. But we all speak the same language.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at the fudgy zones. It's not like looking at individual counties with hard lines on them, with one exception, actually, I think, which is on rummage sales in Wisconsin and Illinois. But otherwise, it's kind of a misty sort of zone where the colors shift one into the other.
Yeah, and it varies with map to map and with word to word. With some of them, you get these very sharp lines between the two regions. With most of them, it's kind of a soft blend from one place where, you know, maybe 70% of people say this one term versus the other place where 70% of people say the other one, and then in between, it's like a blend between the two.
I noticed you dedicated the book to your parents, including your dad. His funny accent. What accent does he have?
So he grew up outside Boston, and he came away with something of the Boston accent. It's not quite as pronounced as it was maybe 20 years ago, but it's definitely still there.
Does he still say the names Bob and Donna?
It's not quite that bad, but it's on that spectrum.
How does the South Jersey accent that you grew up around differ from the North Jersey accent? I'm assuming this is not the Jersey part of Jersey.
Yeah, so New Jersey is really interesting because in some ways it doesn't really have a dialect of its own. It's more divided between the South, which comes under the influence of Philadelphia, and the North that comes under the influence of New York. So northern New Jersey accents and dialect are similar to a New York, and then southern Jersey accents and dialect are close to what you would hear in Philadelphia.
So do you have cheesesteaks in South Jersey, that sort of thing?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It is funny how much of our national or regional thinking is confined to sandwiches, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of the things in the book are really tied up with food, which is kind of fun. You have the hoagies versus subs, sprinkles versus jimmies.
There are some steps in the process that led up to the book. Tell us about some of the things you did to obtain the information that got into the book.
Sure. So it really all started, I was in grad school for statistics, and as part of my spatial statistics class, the professor said, just go find a data set and do some kind of spatial analysis on it. I remembered this old linguistic survey called the Harvard Dialect Survey that was conducted about 15 years ago, and they posted their results online, and I had seen them and thought, you know, I want to try and map this data in a new way. And so I did that as part of this stats project and then posted the results online, just kind of a proof of concept of trying to show where in the country people said different things. The maps got really popular, which led to the next project, which was trying to developed this quiz that people could take this 25-question quiz, and at the end, you'd get this map kind of predicting where in the country you came from. And using that quiz, I was also collecting the data that people would enter as their answers. So at the same time people were taking this quiz, I was also collecting data. And I ended up getting about 350,000 responses to that quiz, and that data is what I used to power the maps in the book.
Wow, 350,000, that's a good solid data set, isn't it?
Yeah, which is really useful for a statistician because it helps you control. The more data you have, the more you're able to control for variables like age and gender and geography.
All right, so you can correlate better, figure out what's the best stuff to keep there and the weighting and all that stuff. We'll talk more about the statistical compilation and how it led to a very, very visual book called Speaking American, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk. Josh Katz calls it a visual guide. He is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk more about heroes, hoagies, grinders, subs, sneakers, tennis shoes, gym shoes, you name it, all the regional differences that we can pile up in here. And you're more than welcome to join this conversation. We'll come back and talk more with Josh Katz and take phone calls and emails from you in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Josh Katz from the New York Times, where he works on data work and making graphics for news stories and making stories themselves. He's compiled a lot of great information that came from an online survey he posted asking people where they're from or asking people actually what words they use, and from that determining where they're from. It led to the book called Speaking American, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk. You can join us here at the Jefferson Exchange. Lots of regionalisms we can explore. We can have a lot of fun with this. Let's hear about what you call soda or pop or tonic or Coca-Cola. There's a whole long list of stuff here, but let's hear your variations on these as you talk to us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Josh, I know I took one survey myself that was along these same lines. Have there been imitators?
Yeah, there have been some. The survey, do you remember where the survey you took was from?
Yeah, well, it was through Facebook, so I'm not sure where it linked to from there.
So the pilot survey that I ended up putting together and used to collect the data, I also then adapted into a version for the Times, which is something that I think some 20 or 30 million people ended up taking, or some ridiculous number like that. But yeah.
That's an amazing number. So are there some, I mean, what's usually the first divider? I mean, if somebody uses this term instead of that one, you can tell they're from east of X or something.
I mean, sneakers and tennis shoes is a pretty sharp line, which is one of the first maps in the book. You can see there's a pretty sharp dividing line between the northeast and then where they say sneakers more commonly, and then the rest of the country where you're more likely to hear tennis shoes. Also in Chicago and Cincinnati, you might hear someone call them gym shoes. That's a big one. Another big one is you guys versus y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all is a pretty clear indicator that someone has spent some time in the South.
And I'm always fascinated by some of the smaller variations as well. Like you point out on the map that and the arrows are great. You know, in Kentucky, it's you all. They actually say both words distinctly.
Yeah. And then in Pittsburgh, it's yins, and there's lots of sort of smaller answers like that. And I try to, in the book, also highlight some of the more interesting answers that might not be as widespread, but might shed some light into, history and kind of the stories of the country.
So the history of the different designations for things like sneakers or tennis shoes or whatever you want to call them, I mean, any idea where the as you point out in the book, the product itself is not that old.
Right. Yeah. And with a lot of the things in the book, a lot of it is nothing's really concretely proven for a lot of the etymology. you know, you'll have a lot of different theories about where a particular word came from. The theory with sneakers is that, you know, before sneakers came around, you had these hard-soled shoes with sneakers. You had a soft rubber sole that was easier to sneak around in,
mm-hmm.
and so you get sneakers.
I wonder about a time element in your research here, whether people who are older report things a bit more distinctly, because in the age when obviously we've had television coast to coast for the better part of 70 years now, it seems like regional differences might be breaking down over time.
Yeah, that's what you would expect. And that's what I expected also. The kind of interesting thing is that it turns out that that's not actually true. You have these regional variations are really persisting over time. And while some might fade, other ones will develop. Because ultimately, you know, language is about communicating. And you end up speaking like the people that you speak with every day. So it's really your friends and family growing up, the people around you, more so than it is voices you might hear on TV.
Ah, because the TV's not talking back to you, I guess. It's not a, it's
right.
not a two-way conversation.
Right.
All right, some of the other categories that we can get into here about words that people say. Josh Katz, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Speaking American. Selling your old stuff in front of your house, those events come by a bunch of different names.
Right, so the big two are a garage sale versus a yard sale. Yard sale, you are more likely to hear out east than you are in the west. But you'll have a blend between the two kind of throughout the country. But then there's the smaller terms. So in Connecticut and western Massachusetts, you'll hear people call it a tag sale. In eastern Wisconsin, especially around Milwaukee, it's a rummage sale. And then in New York, you'll hear people, because we don't really have garages or yards so much, but we do have stoops, which is the front steps leading up to an apartment building.
Huh.
And so we'll have a stoop sale.
I'd never heard that one before. Does the research account for the intensity of interest? I did live in Green Bay for a year and a half, and I noticed that that rummage sales were on actually in maps published in the newspaper every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to pick up the intensity so much, although I will say, just to get back to something you'd mentioned before with age, because I was able to track people's age, also, I was able to control for that and also note in the book a few places where the variants are shifting over time. So younger speakers are more likely to use one form or the other. One example is the word often,
mm-hmm.
Which you might hear pronounced often with that audible T.
Yeah.
So that's much more common the younger that you are. Whereas if you're older, it's more likely to be a silent T, just as often.
Interesting. Did you get into things like use of the actual vocal instrument? You know, the way people come up at the ends of words now?
Oh, I didn't. So that was slightly beyond the scope of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But things like that are always really interesting, how these new speech patterns develop over time and how eventually some of them come to be normalized and some don't.
Truly. I want to come back to rummage, yard, tag, and stoop sales because there's some interesting history in here. The origin of the term rummage you track in the book. Where'd that come from?
Right. So they actually trace that back to the French, to a French word that meant arrangement of cargo. And the word, it's theorized, it referred specifically to arranging cargo on a ship. And so the term rummage sale came up in the early 1800s to mean a sale of unclaimed goods at the docks.
Oh, okay. So the original rummage sale was actually not somebody's stuff. It was just, it was other people's stuff, but not that they were there to be able to sell it themselves.
Ship lands at port, and the things that they don't want off the ship, they would sell right there in the dock, and that was the rummage sale.
Huh. And we move on to lawn care. Who knew there were such variations?
So that's the mow the lawn versus cut the grass and mow the grass. So in the kind of southeastern U.S., you're more likely to hear cut the grass
mm-hmm.
versus in the rest of the country, you're more likely to hear mow the lawn. And, yeah, I had no idea that one really divided the country at all until doing the research for the book. And there's a lot of things, there's a lot of examples in the book that I sort of just always assumed that the words that I had used were much more universal than they actually ended up being.
Well, you know, I find myself stopping now and thinking I'm not sure the term I use. I think I say mow the lawn as opposed to mow the grass. But these are so subtle. I mean, after a while, the words mean less than the fact that you've conveyed the idea and you don't even really notice the words I'm thinking.
Sure. And I mean, it's not like if you said mow the lawn and someone else came up to you and said they were about to go cut the grass, you would know what they meant.
Mm-hmm.
And with pretty much everything in the book, it's not like you would really be confused by what the other person is saying. It just might not be the first word that you would say.
Well, and in fact, I found myself wondering, in response to a call from one of our listeners, Jeannie in Medford, wants to know about supper versus dinner. And I looked that up in the index of the book while we're on break and realized I don't know the word that I use to describe the evening meal. I know it's always lunch in the middle of the day for me, so not Southern where it's dinner in the middle of the day and then supper at the end of it. But those are, I mean, again, these are words that you don't necessarily even think about your use of, it seems like.
Yeah, and I mean, ideally when collecting the data, the hope is that someone doesn't think too hard about which word they actually use and just kind of answer with you know, their first instinct. Because if you think too hard about it, then you sort of become too self-conscious about how you're speaking or which word you're using, and you might, that kind of corrupts the data a little bit.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Josh Katz of the New York Times about his book, Speaking American, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk, all those differences in the things we say, like calling things pop or soda or Coke, are indicated on very colorful maps. Josh has taken an enormous amount of data and put it onto these maps to let us know where people use certain terms. And it turns out it's not a really hard set of lines. There's a lot of fudgy zones across the country where usage overlaps. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Is it supper or dinner at your house? Is it trash or garbage? Do you mow the lawn or cut the grass? Let's hear your variations. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Now, while we're preparing meals, whether we call them supper or dinner, skillets and frying pans. This is an interesting one, too.
Yeah, so that one, you'll see skillet kind of across the middle southern part of the country, strongest kind of along the Mississippi River and Arkansas, Mississippi, and western Tennessee, whereas with the rest of the country, you're more likely to hear frying pan.
And what is the word source of skillet? I never stopped to think about this until you brought it up.
That's a great question. I actually don't know the answer to that one. With some of them, I was able to kind of dive into and get into a little bit more detail. Other ones, it's just more of a kind of quick skim through of here's where they say frying pan, here's where they say skillet, and then on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm. It looks like a larger portion of the country saying frying pan instead of skillet.
Yeah, I think it ends up being about, I want to say 80% of the country says frying pan versus skillet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we get to the subject of paper, and this was interesting to me because I looked at the map and realized, oh, yeah, I went to high school in Connecticut and college in Missouri, and the paper that you use when you're doing your math longhand on a test, we use different terms for those. What are those?
Right. So for me, growing up, it was always scrap paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized when making the map that actually for most of the country it's scratch paper. And so you have this divide between scrap paper in the east and scratch paper in the west and south.
Huh. But basically, it's the same thing. I mean, it's
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we're done, then where do we throw the used paper? And this is another regional difference.
Right. So that's the whole. You have a garbage can versus a trash can, and you can see on the map that garbage can kind of runs sort of along the northern part of the country, strongest in Chicago and New York, and then trash can everywhere else.
And I like the companion graphic to this one, too, garbage and trash. The year of birth figures prominently in word usage.
Right. So this is one where the younger you are, the more likely you are to say trash can versus garbage can.
Interesting. Were there any things that really blew you away that when you looked at the data mapped out that you went, wow, there's this weird strip that comes from here to here of people who just say this?
Sure. I mean, there were some also just expressions that I was surprised by. For example, like if it's raining while the sun is shining, what I would call a sun shower.
Uh-huh.
Actually, most of the country doesn't have a word for that, which I didn't know. And I also didn't know that in parts of the South, they call that the devil beating his wife.
What?
Yeah. And I assumed that when I read that, I was like, oh, well, this just must be, you know, maybe they call that in the 60s, but people aren't actually saying that anymore. But in conducting the survey, I got thousands of responses saying that people still said that. So it's indeed still something that people say.
Wow, that's amazing stuff. Let's go to Michael in Wonder, Oregon. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Josh Katz, the author of Speaking American.
Good morning. This isn't what I called about, but I'd like to comment on your last assertion about the devil beating his wife.
Sure.
I was born in Germany, and my mother, who's from Germany, told me that she used to say that as a child, that was a common expression in Germany, the sun is shining when it's raining.
Wow, okay, that's interesting. So it goes from overseas as well.
Yeah, so that seems to go back to other countries. What I actually was curious about, and my curiosity was aroused in thinking about what you were saying and then thinking about Donald Trump. Not that I want this to be about him, but do people acquire different attitudes and perspectives on life and different behavior patterns because they speak differently in different parts of the country?
Okay, interesting question. Thanks for that, Michael. Appreciate it. So there certainly can be a more abrupt style of speaking, and whether attitudes follow along with that, I think, is what Michael's getting to.
Sure. There's a lot to unpack in that question. It's a great question. Before I get to that, though, I should say that you mentioned that in German there's an expression for similar to the devil beating his wife for a sun shower, and it's interesting because you actually see similar expressions in a whole wide variety of languages. So in Armenian, it's the wolf is having a baby. In Zulu, it's called a wedding for monkeys. In Japanese, it's called a fox's wedding. It's almost universally seen throughout all of these different languages. You'll have this interesting folk expression for when it's raining while the sun is shining, which
that's
kind of fun.
That's almost a book in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
So now to the New York City method of speaking question. Yeah,
sure. So with Donald Trump, one thing that you will see is that New York, it's kind of a New York accent marker of saying huge instead of huge.
Mm-hmm.
But really the question of if how you talk kind of determines how you think is it was called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, which is a sort of famous linguistic hypothesis that has been debated back and forth. I don't think it's ever been conclusively answered one way or another, but it's certainly an interesting idea.
Okay, the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis?
Yeah.
All right. Got to look that one up. There it is. Okay. We'll get to that in a moment. But so other things in the book here, and this one is really interesting to me because I see a generational split here. What we say when people sneeze, what are the leaders there?
Right. So that you have, bless you versus Gesundheit are the big two. And the latter you'll see more in the Midwest where there were a lot of German immigrants because it comes from a German expression.
Okay, but does this one track on generational lines? Because I noticed that one of the figures on the map is they don't say anything, and it seems like that skews a bit younger from my experience.
Yeah, it does. It also, interestingly, tracks somewhat along gender lines, so men are slightly less likely to say bless you than women are.
Okay. You mentioned the address that we use for each other, you all or yous, and the yins from Pittsburgh. You can kind of figure out where the yous would come from, but I'm not. Where does yins come from? Is there any track back on that?
Yeah, I've read a few different theories. Some have said that it comes from sort of like yuans,
mm-hmm.
and then as you shorten that and kind of slur it a little bit more, it gets down to yins.
And I heard people saying use guys in Green Bay. Did you pick up on that pocket?
Yeah, I didn't quite as much. I may have to do another round of the survey.
Yeah, it was interesting that that some of the accents in the Green Bay area sounded to me like the Long Island accent I knew growing up. But we can get into that a bit more when we come back and talk more with Josh Katz about his book, Speaking American, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk. It's a visual guide that really literally maps where we use different terms in the language to mean the same thing in this country. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Josh Katz and more examples from you when we come to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Josh Katz with the New York Times. He is he's really steeped in statistics and compiling of figures and creates a lot of informational graphics for the New York Times about that and stories as well. His book is called Speaking American, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk. So you know how we say soda in some places and pop in others? He's actually put that onto maps of the United States to show the regionalisms. And it's really interesting, not just to see where we say certain things, but the fact that there's a lot of overlap and overlay. These are not like the red state, blue state maps where everything just stops at the state line. But a lot of fudge and mist and haze on these maps showing that there is a lot of overlap. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. You probably have lots of things you'd like to talk about the things that we use to describe certain events, mowing the lawn or cutting the grass. Do you eat a hoagie, a sub, a grinder, or a hero? Do you wear tennis shoes or sneakers? Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's go to Mike in Yreka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Josh Katz.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi, go ahead.
I have a question that regards more the pronunciation of a word.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Montana where we would say insurance with the emphasis on the second syllable. But lately, as I just find it more on the first syllable, insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And is that more of a localized thing or is that has just changed overall?
That is a good question. I find it regional myself, Mike, having heard insurance, umbrella, and Thanksgiving in the South and nowhere else, but it seems to be spreading. So take it up, Josh.
Yeah, that is a great observation. And those the three that you named just there, the insurance, umbrella, and Thanksgiving, those are the three that you'll really hear a lot in the South. It's definitely a regionalism, and I think I'll have to check this, but I'm pretty sure it's actually on the decline rather than spreading.
Okay, so we are moving more towards saying insurance, or is it spreading the other way?
It's more towards insurance.
Okay.
Although I'll have to double check that.
All right, okay. Let's take another call from Carol in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Josh Katz.
Hi, I'm calling in regards to what people might call themselves, especially racially. For instance, white versus Caucasian, black versus African-American, Hispanic versus Latino, or other options?
Okay, very interesting question. Thanks for that, Carol. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I don't have any data for that in the book specifically, but it's also interesting just because a lot of things with language get very much wrapped up in our identities and sense of place and sense of who we are. So I think it would be really interesting to explore that specifically.
Is there anything in the book that gets to the other end of that, where the terms we use for other people? Do we have any racist terms in the book, stuff like that?
So not in this book. I will say I use the Dictionary of American Regional English, which is this really kind of giant tome. I'm compiling all of these interviews from, a lot of them are from, say, 50 years ago of all the different terms that people used. And the way that they conducted their surveys was much more time-consuming because they would actually go to people's houses and sit down and talk to them and record which words they were using. But in that dictionary, you will have a whole chapter just for various racist terms that people used. I think most of them are sort of on their way out now, but it's not in this book so much.
Okay. All right. So really interesting map in here about speaking American and what that language is, though. Tell us about that.
Sure, yeah. So I did want to, while the book focuses pretty much exclusively on English, just as that's the nature of the data, I wanted to call attention to the fact that there is a very significant portion of the country for which their primary language is not English, mostly Spanish. It's over 60 million Americans speak a language other than English in their homes, which is really a fairly large number. And so I want to kind of call attention to that fact just on this page in the book.
Well, and this is an interesting map, really interesting to me, because it is blocked up by counties in the way that a lot of the others aren't, and mm-hmm. and you have specific gradients. And it's kind of surprising, the places that you do see Spanish used more than 0% in a household. You know, places in like upstate New York, for example, that you might not have expected to see Spanish spoken. And is it urban? Is it agriculture? Some combination?
It's kind of a combination of a lot of different things. But yeah, I mean, and you also see the places you'd expect, southern Florida and Texas, New Mexico and California.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to units of time here. This is interesting because how big a difference is it in telling people what time it is? We started with the example of whether it's 9:13 or about quarter after the hour, but there are some distinctions here.
Yeah, and that was one that actually just came from my personal experience, because I mentioned that it was quarter of four. And the person I was talking to had no idea what I was talking about.
Quarter of four, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I realized that there were multiple ways of saying that time, whether it's quarter of four versus quarter to four versus just 3:45. And quarter of four ends up being more of a kind of Philadelphia, South Jersey, and New England expression.
Uh-huh. I remember using that myself. So that's a really narrow zone, though. Most of us say quarter till four.
Actually, most say about 50% just say 3:45, huh. And then the next most common is quarter to four, uh-huh. Which you'll see. It's a fairly even distribution across the country, but most common in kind of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan.
I would have loved to have seen the map from 50 years ago before we got all the digital clocks around us. It would have been a different kind of thing. Well, let's take some more calls. Here's Debbie in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Josh Katz, the author of Speaking American.
Hi. My question, there's two phrases I'm wondering about. One is the word couch, Davenport, sofa, and how they're distributed. And the second one is the phrase used to. I used to do something, or I'm used to doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen anything on either of those?
All right. Thanks for the question, Debbie.
Yeah, those are both great examples. Neither of them were in the book or in the data I collected, but they're both on the list for the second round of data collection for the sequel. And kind of the fun part about the subject is that it's really this endless source of different variants. I mean, you know, in this book, there's only so much room, and so I had to leave a lot out, but I'm hoping to get back to that later.
You must be a lot of fun at parties, because once you start talking about this, people will start bringing up examples like that. Like, hey, did you call it a couch or a sofa?
Yeah, and you learn a lot of things that you might not have even considered that people would use different words for.
Were there things, I mean, you've probably been things you've heard about since you collected all the data and locked it up for the book, but I mean, in the process of getting stuff locked up for the book, was there one above all others that made you go, wow, I never heard that?
Yeah, I think it would be probably calling what I would call a winter hat,
uh-huh.
Calling it a toboggan, which to me is a sled.
Yeah, I've heard toboggan hat. I get kind of morphed from there. So are we talking about a knit cap?
Yeah.
But which is called a beanie by some people now. My father used to call it something else. We called it stocking caps in the 60s, but they were longer, too.
Right. See, you've already, you know, there's like six different words right there.
Right. Etymology at work here in real time. Yeah. Joni in Mount Shasta, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Josh Katz.
Hi. I was just wondering if your speaker ever ran across talking to people from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
The Youp?
They're called Youpers. It's
sure.
A lot of Scandinavian people, Norwegian, Swedes, Finns, lots of Finns. And they have a whole language of their own. I was born and raised there, and like you were just talking about sled, we always called them sleighs.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Which part of the UP, from Marquette or Escanaba? Which end of it?
The very western tip, Bessemer, Michigan, where Wisconsin and Minnesota pretty much connect right there.
Okay. Way down to UP. Okay. Thanks for the question, Joni. It's a great accent, too. And in fact, Josh, I can relate that when I lived in nearby Wisconsin in Green Bay, that was when the tourism slogan for Michigan was "Say yes to Michigan" with an exclamation point. And bumper stickers showed up from the UP saying, "Say yeah to the UP, eh?"
That's a great kind of tidbit. So you have the Upper Peninsula, at least in the data that I was looking at, was closer to, say, mainland Michigan than it would be to Wisconsin. But you definitely see more of a Canadian influence in the language there.
And, of course, it is pretty hard by Canada, just across Lake Superior there. Let's see, another call here from Al in Eugene. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. You know, I noticed the usage of Caucasian in this country compared to the usage of Caucasian, let's say, in the Middle East, where people don't necessarily be white, but they consider themselves Caucasian, because the understanding is that Caucasian has to do with people who originally came from the Caucasus, and it's a more of a facial feature rather than a race.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for that, Al. Thoughts on that, Josh?
I'm not sure I quite caught all of it, but what was the question about?
It was less about white skin than about facial structure.
Yeah, I mean, so with things like that, mostly I kind of stayed away from questions like that in the book, and focused more on, you know, different words for food or garbage can versus trash can, things like that.
Or catty corner versus kitty corner, which here again, I don't think I've really noticed that those differences exist, but they do, and you can map them and have.
Right, exactly. And to me, that's just something is diagonal, and I think I had never heard kitty corner or catty corner until doing this research.
Well, that raises an interesting question, though, because you moved from South Jersey, which has a very Philadelphia-like accent, to North Carolina, and I wonder how much of a—granted, on a college campus, you're going to hear a little less variation than out in the country, but were there some moments when you were mutually not understood by people from North Carolina, for example?
No, and that's the thing, is that, you know, you can use all these different words, but for the most part, we pretty much understand what everyone else is saying. But I have, you know, I moved down there thinking like, oh, you know, maybe I'll pick up the word y'all, start saying y'all, and it just never took. Mm-hmm. I was kind of disappointed by that.
So what do you say when you're referring to groups of people now?
I'm still you guys.
You guys, okay.
Yeah.
No, y'all. Yeah, y'all is a great all-purpose term, though.
It really is.
I want to talk back to units of time, because we talked about quarter to four, quarter of four versus 3:45. Larger unit of time here, the night before Halloween. And I think in a lot of areas, there's just not much of anything here. But in a lot of places, it does have a name, and it certainly did in South Jersey.
Right, and that was one that I thought everyone said. It was only when I went to college and I mentioned Mischief Night, and my roommate looked at me and like, what is that? So, right, for me, Philadelphia, New Jersey, it's called Mischief Night. And then, whereas in Michigan and Pittsburgh, you'll hear Devil's Night. Other names for it are like Goosey Night, Gate Night, Cabbage Night. But for almost all of the country, there's no word for it at all.
All right, yeah, and I wasn't aware that, I actually became aware of Devil's Night in Detroit because it involved a lot of arson fires for years, which I think they've managed to reduce in time, but wasn't even aware that any place really had some sort of name for the night before Halloween.
Yeah.
We have Kathleen in Ashland wants to ask about back east, where she says they say congestion or thickly settled. Were you aware of that difference?
I was not aware of that difference, although one thing I should say is the whole phrase back east is a much more kind of West Coast thing to say.
Mm-hmm. All right. So before we get out of here, let's get to the big one, the sandwich one. How did we end up with grinders, hoagies, heroes, subs, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, I mean, obviously they should be called hoagies. That's the proper
you insist.
But yeah, yeah. But that was one, and I really wanted to know, you know, where did that word hoagie come from? And a lot of people have looked at it, and no one has come up with a conclusive answer. So I put forward, you know, these four different possible origin stories for the word hoagie in the book, all of which are probably false, but they're the best that we have so far.
And soda, pop, and Coke, and you even have a little subset of for Coca-Cola. There's a great one from Massachusetts that I heard over the years that's almost extinct now, you say. What is that?
Yeah, so that's tonic. A good portion of people in the area outside of Boston say tonic, but it seems to be on the decline and maybe on its way out.
Okay, everybody go out for a lobster grinder with a bottle of Coke and wash it down with a bit of pecan pie. Right there, you can get into big regional differences. Josh Katz, Speaking American is the book. Thanks so much for joining us on The Exchange today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, take care.